the end of the day as well. So please find your seats again.
Let's go.
I think I can get pretty good pulse audio care of this.
Dave.
This is...
Good. I think so. Are we? Are you good with mics?
All right. So, unless you've been living under a rock, you probably know who Shurumatsu Post is. If you've been to our summit last time in April, you definitely know who Brett is by now. They have set up Akiya Hub about 9 months ago, I believe. And they've already got quite a few people who have taken the journey with them, which is what they're going to be talking to you about today, what these people are after, what they were looking for, what looks like a bad journey, good journey for anyone purchasing houses under the Akiya Hub platform. And they've also got a special announcement, which I'm personally very thrilled about. But yes, please, Shurumatsu Post and Brett Lee.
Technical difficulties. Is it displaying up here? No. You guys can see that, but it's not showing this. Well, that's unfortunate.
For the old plan.
Yeah, maybe, but I'm in offline mode. Let's see. Yeah. Do we have Wi-Fi, Ziv?
I can hotspot you more.
Oh, yeah, I can probably hotspot my phone, right?
We do, but we can share it with everyone, so I can give it to you secretly.
I can hotspot my phone. It should be fine. I'm assuming that's why it's not working. Yep. Okay. That's what it was.
Cool. We good?
Yep, we're good. Okay. So this is our... Oh. Test, test. This is our 2025 Buying in Japan Field Report. And first, I want to say thank you all for staying to the last talk of the summit. So I know it's been a really fun weekend so far, and we're really excited to be a part of this. And it's growing. This is our second one, but it feels like it doubled in size since last year. So it's awesome to see. We actually have a free gift for everyone. We have some Akiya Hub employees in the back of the room that if you go talk to them, they'll hand out one of these free gifts to you. It's more than a bike, worth more than a bike, but less than a car. So you're definitely going to want to get one. Who are we? We are Akiya Hub. My name is Brett Lee, CEO, co-founder of Akiya Hub with Shurumatsu Post, my other co-founder. Why are we here? We are here to help people who love Japan get safe, easy, trusted access to Japanese real estate opportunities. Akiya Hub is a community of over 13,000 members now. And yes, we're only 9 months old, so it's been some pretty meteoric growth. And we have a network of over 200 real estate brokerages, renovation companies, and property managers that is expanding every week. The more that we go into communities, help people buy, find, and renovate houses. We are not a real estate agency, though, so that's a really important note. And our goal is not to sell you a house. Our hope is that if we reach enough people who really love Japan, and if we can foster a strong enough community, that we can harness the market forces of supply and demand, and that in 10 or 20 years, many areas and thousands of houses that would otherwise be abandoned will still be with us. And if we played a small part in making that happen, we succeeded. And it's really important to note, this is something we were just looking at. Every time we sell a house, it's not just one person buying one house. It's one person buying a house, but then that helps the judicial scrivener. The money kind of flows throughout to many different partners. It's more than just the real estate side of the business. It's actually helping the community all the way down to the local restaurants, the electricians, the big camera employee who sells you your air conditions for your house, the movers that help you move everything. It's a true ripple effect into a community. So even just one, two, or even three properties can really impact a local area, regardless of if it's a rural area or even in cities. Or we sell a lot of houses in Yokohama. It's very developed, but it still helps these little areas that you might have never even heard of. So how's it going? Our team already has helped hundreds of people find and become homeowners in Japan. We've scaled our team to 12 members, 12 employees in 8 months. And we're not done yet. We are hiring. So if anyone is that lives in Japan is interested in working with us, go to akihub.com/careers. Let's get into the field report. So I love data and Shu loves stories. So you're going to get both. Part one, I'll just go through a bunch of the numbers. It's really boring, but hopefully you'll be intrigued by it a bit. And part two, Shu's going to share some awesome stories about two properties that he personally purchased in kind of a crazy way on both of them. So I really love the stories. I got to see it happen in real time. Big disclaimer though. So it's data. And this data has a disclaimer, just like all data should. If anyone's giving you data without a disclaimer, it's probably not great data. This comes from our 13,000 members and 200 partners. So you can interpret this data however you like, but this is how we interpret the data because it's the data that we use to run our business. It's the situation on the ground as we see it, and we make our decisions based on this data. So it doesn't come from the internet. It's not something that's like scraped and AI generated. We've compiled this information ourselves, thousands of hours into 2025, and it's literally like the information we're using to make all of our decisions for 2026 business. The last summit, again, we announced that we officially launched on February 10th of this year, and we had just missed actually the 3,500 member milestone. We were at like 35,998 or something. We were like two members short. And in the past 4 months since the last summit, we've grown by 10,000 and hit the 13,000. I think today we're almost at 14,000. It's going up very fast. We'll definitely be on track for 20,000 members by the end of the year. So our community comes into the market, and this is part of the disclaimer, with certain goals and ideas, and the data reflects that. But I think it's really interesting because many of you, and I think there are quite a few AkiyaHub members here, share their same goals and ideas. So I think this data will be really important for you. But it's not inclusive to the entire market. It's just as we see it. So data point number one, what type of properties are people looking for? So we've broken it up into four categories. And this, at the time that I pulled this data, so you can run all the numbers if you want, it was 13,371 members. So 32% of people are looking for vacation houses. 29% are looking for a primary residence, so they actually plan to move to Japan, not just stay here temporarily. 26% are looking purely for investment potential. And then 13% of people kind of undecided. They don't know. We got to carry them over the bridge of unawareness into what it is that they're actually looking for. Data point number two, what's the number one concern that people have when buying a home in Japan? Does anyone have any ideas? Emil, what do you think it is? I can tell you, number two is not knowing Japanese. That's number two. Number one is hidden cost. Everyone comes in going, oh, there must be some crazy hidden costs. And you're right, like there are sometimes. So that was one of the very first things we set out to fix on our platform and for the community is how can we add more transparency to real estate transactions here in Japan for foreigners? You know, in Japan, it is transparent if you speak Japanese and understand the process and know all the things going in and out. But as a foreigner, you just don't have the same transparency. It's a little bit more opaque. So the first thing we did was we built two things. One was a full estimated price calculator. You put in how much the property is. We'll show you every single little fee that we know of, and it's variable. So like if your particular judicial scrivener charges a little bit more money, you can adjust that. But this was a really, really helpful tool for a lot of people to just understand, hey, it's not just the, you know, 10 million yen house you see on Instagram. It's also all these other fees and services and things that are involved. However, I learned the hard way that there's this old thing about you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make people drink. So, people still just want an easy button. So we built a second thing. Just give us one number. What's your budget? And we'll back into what can you actually afford? And this has been way, way, way more helpful because most people are just like, I have this much in my bank account and I want to buy a house. Cool. Well, you can't spend just that much and get the house. You're going to need to spend a little less than that and add all these fees. So one simple input and you'll know exactly how much you can afford. But we didn't stop there. We actually make it super easy because when you're looking at a property on our platform, we just put a big button here. So you just press it. You've already saved what your budget is. So every single property, you can view the full calculation so that you don't have to guess and worry about what the real prices may be. This is an example of our property feed where you kind of like dating apps like Tinder, you look at one property at a time and you say, I like it or I don't like it. And then it recommends more properties for you. We also have it in our quick search, which is one of our features where if you just want to get an assessment of an area, you have a budget, you have a couple of different variables, size of the house, age, you can look at a bunch of properties that it's already preset for that affordability number that you've put in. And then we also have in our map search, and you can have all the predefined filters will all go based off of your affordability and what you have here. This is actually a new feature that we just rolled out that is the property radar. So instead of just looking at thousands of houses and areas that you probably don't even know what this area is, you can use a whole bunch of different scoring algorithms and even custom ones yourself so that you can see what the good deals and opportunities may be based on your personal preferences. Maybe you like the property, you're fine with an older property, but you really care about the price, or maybe you care about the size and the age more than you do the price. You can adjust that and get color-coded view of what those properties are in the area that you're interested in. Data point number three. What price point attracts people to the market? And I think this will be interesting for a lot of people in the room because it's what is their budget? What does the number say of our 13,000 members? What are they bringing? So budgets are very interesting. I have a couple different ways to show it. So the bottom 10% of people under $20,000, a little bit more unrealistic, probably not gonna get into the market without a lot of headaches. And you should be incredibly committed to Japan if you're gonna try to find a house at that price. The top of the market, anything over 300,000, that's like the top 10% of people are looking for 300,000. But the majority of people come in this 92 to 200 range. And the sweet spot that we found that were the best outcomes where people are the absolute happiest with their decisions is between 92 and 128,000. That is the absolute sweet spot where they're buying houses that are not falling apart. They might need light renovations. They want it for a vacation house. They want it for an investment property. That's the sweet spot. But there are these two other ranges of budgets that we see. The red part here in the middle is the, I have enough money to get something pretty good, but I have analysis paralysis because now there's so many things possible that I can't make a decision. And now the expectations are kind of misaligned because they've worked their budget up the ladder of, okay, this house is 120,000, but if I just spend 10 more, I can get this. And if I just spend 10 more, I can get that. And they kind of get stuck in that. And in the investment range, the green area here, this is the best for people that are looking to actually invest, not just live here, not just have a vacation home, but they want to get properties that are maybe long-term rentals with high yields. Where you come into the market with 200 to 300,000, you can get one, two, maybe even three, if you're lucky, properties that are just for investment. But if you come below that, it's probably going to be a little bit more difficult unless you just want to try it out with one property. Data point number four. The buyers themselves, and this is where it gets pretty fun. So we have data from 6 months before to look at compared to today. One of the interesting things is the budgets have gone up in the past 6 months. People are coming into the market with about 12% more money that they want to spend in Japan. Now that's either they're just saving more and it's just naturally happening, or prices are going up and they know that and they expect it. Sentiment is way, way up. People are really happy about the opportunities and the potential. And really, there's less dreamers and more people that are trying to take action and actually want to buy. And I think a big part of that is just education, you know, building the unaware people, taking them up the ladder from unaware to educated to motivated, and then actually taking action. This is kind of what we've designed our platform around, and it's helped a lot of people so far, and I think it's going to help a lot more because they're more prepared. So they're actually right now seeking guidance more than they are just asking, can I buy a house in Japan? We don't really get as many of those people anymore. They want to be more hands-on. They don't want to just buy a house in Japan. They want to know what's going on. How does this work? What are the steps in the process? Instead of a lot of our clients before were just do it. Just buy me a house. Like, just take care of it for me. So I think that's really good for everyone and for the market, because it's going to add a lot more to the whole experience, and people are going to be more aware, and people are going to do things the right way. So how do we meet the community where they're at with that shift in and what they're actually looking for? They want a little bit more hands-on guidance, but they don't speak Japanese and they don't have all of the tools pretty much to be able to do that themselves. So previously, again, we did 100% done for you services. We'll just do absolutely everything and you just pay us a fee. But we've actually shifted now to offer a kind of pay as you go system, because we broke everything down into these key milestones. And we put a lot of tools together so that you can kind of control the flow and take over the buying process, but have us do all the actual hard work and heavy lifting, and put even more partnerships in place to support this, so that you can go through our new Your Journey program. And we've actually broken it up into 10 steps so that you have a nice video from Shu explaining every single thing that's going to happen, what your goals are, what you're going to see, what needs to be done. And then each step you unlock by completing the tasks and goals that we've set for you. Step one is searching. So once you've found enough properties and you scored them with our scoring system high enough, you can unlock and go to the next step. And this carries all the way through closing, where you can see when your scheduled closing day was, if all the paperwork has been signed, pretty much a full end-to-end service that you still drive and set the pace and how you want to consume that. So that's the Your Journey program. So far, since we launched it, 453 people have gone through this journey program to make things more accessible and transparent. And really, we think it's the best way right now for people to go from educated all the way through taking action and actually buying a house. So if you're serious, that's a pretty good program for that. Data point number five, and we're still talking about the buyers. So what are their timelines? So it's really interesting that most people, 29% of people, want to buy right now. They're coming completely ready to purchase a house. 25% of people are about 6 months. They know they want to. They're still putting things together. 22% of people, 3 months. And then 16% of people, 1 year. They're the big planners. And 5% greater than 1 year. On them. So one of the things that has been interesting to see is, as we've been adding more support and growing our team and meeting more partners, the actual time for searching to keys in hand has been less than 90 days. That's like part of our major marketing now. It's like, it's very rare that it is more than 90 days. A lot of our clients, 35, 40 days, which is really fast for real estate transactions anywhere. But I think it's another good sign that Japan's like opening up and understanding the process more, and they're more willing to work with us a lot, which has been great to see. So what we can do with a lot of the data that we have about timelines, though, is we can have an outlook based on the 13,000 members we have. When do they actually want to own a home in Japan? So this is the Q4 and 2026 Q2 outlook of when we think people are going to be closing on all of their houses. So there are actually some dips here, which if you're an investor, these are actually really good buying times, because they're going to be less pressure in the market. Properties might sit for a little bit longer on the market, so you can go in and maybe snap up a couple of them whenever there's less buying demand. Now, that's all of the data for this talk, but we do have a few more things that we want to talk about. Many members have asked us about multifamily investing, and we know what we don't know. And we recently started doing some multifamily deals when we had savvy investors that already know about multifamily investing come in, and they just needed help with the real estate journey. But they could run their own numbers. They just needed help with the process. We're not experts, but we are launching an Akia Hub Experts program, and our very first expert is none other than Ziv. Yeah. So Ziv is going to be providing a multifamily accelerator for everyone so that you can work one-on-one with Ziv. And it starts with some awesome content that you and Ziv just finished shooting, which is fun, to give you all the basics so you can understand everything in a nice video. So when you get to have your meeting with Ziv, you already know all the basics and you can get into the meat of it. And the output of that is going to be a personalized snapshot of three properties, multifamily, that look similar to what you want, that were already sold recently, and then three properties that are currently on the market that are opportunities that you can get into, personalized for you and what you're trying to do. Yeah, but they're not going to stay long. So you got a couple days maybe. But this is our first expert. We'll have a couple more we'll announce and hopefully upcoming summits. But I'm really excited about it. Excited to be working with Ziv more. And I'm excited for multifamily because there is a lot of demand for that. And I think it's going to be great. Now, this is a fun part of the presentation. I just called it the Dream Crusher because there's a couple things that we just keep seeing over and over and over when it comes to everyone coming into our platform. One of the most common goals, dreams, ideas, whatever you want to call it, that people come to us with is, can I buy a cheap house and put it on Airbnb while I'm not there? That's the number one thing. Does anyone want to do that? Because I'm going to crush your dream right now, Tracy. It's done. Yeah. So STR is hard, and short-term rental, Airbnb, booking, whatever you wanted to use. It's hard anywhere. And it's 10 times harder in Japan, as I'm sure you've heard from the other speakers during this summit. If you didn't know, it's actually a hospitality business. It's not a passive income source. You don't just, you know, buy a property, put it on Airbnb and collect a check. It's a full, and especially in Japan, it is a true hospitality business. You need to manage and run those properties. And if you don't do it yourself, or if you don't have a partner that can do it for you, it's a nightmare. So I really think that, you know, the rules and regulations are growing. They might not be stopping everything, but they're just adding more and more barriers to it. And whether it's true or perceived, the cultural impact of short-term is on people's minds. People are talking about it. It's in the news. You've seen some of the political stuff going on. It's a thing. So what do? If you do want an investment property, but you also want to use it yourself, what are the options? So right now, if you don't have an expert like Tracy or Chai helping you navigate the whole landscape of short-term rentals, you're going to fail. Like, that's pretty much it. You don't have any other options because it's just not feasible. If you have a vacation home, then you've already purchased that. Great. But if you want to cover the cost of ownership and when the probably 6 months, let's be honest, maybe 9 months that you're not using it, what do you do? Maybe for that particular property that you bought and you weren't thinking about Airbnb, it's actually not even legal to put it on Airbnb. There's a lot of regulations around that. Or you can't get a Minpaku license for the specific property for any other reason. They just reject it. Even if, you know, when you bought it, they said you could. And then when you go through all the paperwork, they go, actually, no, you can't. They do that sometimes. So today you have no options. And this is another, just kind of one of these dreamers that we see is, I love Japan, but I've never even been. Sell me a house. It's like, we don't sell houses. We don't want to sell you a house. You've never even been to Japan. Or I visited once for 3 days and now I want to buy a house. Okay. We get a lot of that. And it's really important to note that vacationing is not living in Japan. It's a completely different experience. And most people won't tell you that. So we have 13,000 members, but we have 10 times that amount of people reach out to us about trying to buy a house in Japan. It's ridiculous. Like, part of the reason why we have the platform set up the way it does is just to filter out a lot of those people that probably shouldn't be doing it yet. And they're not really prepared to buy a house, but they want to. So what can we do? We looked at these two problems of, you have a vacation home, you have you just want something to have a little passive income, but you want to use it. And we thought about the people that really haven't been to Japan, haven't spent enough time here, but they are truly interested and they want to buy a house. And we said, wouldn't it be great if people could try before they buy a house? Like, it's a little less risky. You can actually experience, really understand if you want to do that or not. And wait a second. Don't tons of people in our community already have vacation homes that they want to STR, but they can't do that? And isn't there a lot of people who need to try living in Japan? Wait a second. What if somebody built a marketplace for everything that facilitated top to bottom legally what you need to do in order to have your vacation homes be something that someone could try before they buy? Owners can list and manage their properties. Guests get to access and manage that experience through a platform. And it has full support for both sides. But what if that existed? Also, what if those properties weren't just any vacation homes? There were properties and vacation homes that had to go and set a certain level of quality. They had to go through some standards for those properties. And there was some sort of curation process to ensure the properties are not just like base level properties, but they're good certified vacation homes that you can try before you buy. And what if, you know, your first week there wasn't you just trying to figure out like how to even find the property, what's around, but what if everything in the property had little QR codes on it and videos shot from the AC remote all the way to the front door to tell you where the closest ramen shop is or where, what if that existed? That would be great, right? We thought so too. So we kickstarted that as a new mission to help as many people truly live like a local in Japan and try before they buy. And to do that, we've brought in ourselves, Kintsugi Group, who is actually the owner of Akia Hub. We brought in Shiki Properties with Chai and Tokyo Family Stays with Tracy. And we're launching a new platform soon. But first, we're going to give access to our members to a Try Before You Buy program, where you have exclusive access to monthly rentals, because you can do monthly rentals all you want. There's no laws or regulations. There's nothing stopping it. It's the same as a long-term rental. It's just 1 month or more. And early next year, we'll launch the full service. And here's a little sneak peek of that service where you can live like a local from day one. And there's only a select few properties so far. So if you're interested in that, I would go and try to book those properties as soon as possible because they will fill up really fast. And now, Shumatsu Post. Get your mic'd up.
Yep. All right, and then look at this one. Okay.
How's everyone doing?
Good.
Good. All right, so I think this is going to be the last talk in this room today. So thank you for staying until the very end. I try to make this one as interesting as possible. So I have two promises for you in this talk. So the first one is I will share the information that I haven't shared publicly. So you're the first, although we're recording it and I'm gonna publish it on YouTube in maybe 2 weeks, but you're the first ones to see this. I wanna be as transparent as possible, like Brett said earlier. And second, this is my field report, so I cannot guarantee if you're going to get the exact same results if you try the same. Hopefully, you will get something similar or better, but this is my field report, so keep that in mind. With that said, let's get started. So what is the number one concern that people have when buying a home in Japan? Do you remember this slide? Yeah? Okay. So it's not knowing Japanese number two, but number one is hidden costs. Okay, so I'm gonna give you very, very specific examples, two examples of the cost, everything that costs me so that you have it, okay? Oh, so I'll show you all the costs. So I call this field report from two case studies that I did. So last year, for those who have consumed my content, maybe you know that I had a goal last year to purchase 5 IKEA houses, and I achieved it for the most part. I actually closed one of them, the last one in January, but I was under contract. And this year, I really wanted to focus on IKEA, building IKEA Hub. So I didn't really have like growing a portfolio goal per se, but I accidentally bought 2 houses. So those are the two case studies, and I'm going to explain why accidents. Okay. And the previous ones, I focused on off-market listings. So very fortunately, because of the network that I built, I know people who have access to off-market listings, specifically in this area, Greater Tokyo. So I was very attracted to those. So I purchased a few of those properties. But the two that I'm going to talk about were on the market. So they were publicly available. And I made these deals work as much as possible. Okay, so the case study number one is high risk, high reward, and high cost. And you might be wondering, like, why did you do that? Like, that doesn't sound very good. Well, I did it so that maybe you don't have to, right? I'll tell you what I learned. And I'm going to explain why these three. Okay. So this is a house in Nakaku of Yokohama, a 7-minute walk from one of the JR Negishi Line stations. And, you know, good location. I thought it's very hilly around that area, but I live very close to it and I knew this is a good location. And I found this property for a client actually at the time. And I recommended it because they were looking for something in this area specifically. And I think it was listed at 16.5 million, but it was too much for them. And, you know, it needed a lot of work. I'm going to show you the pictures. But fast forward a few months, it was still on the market at 12 million. And I was like, okay, 12 million yen for this location, that's not bad. And eventually I negotiated it down to 10 million. So I was like, okay, I have to buy it. Like this, I wasn't going to, but that's a good price. So I decided to buy it. So I didn't mean to buy it at the time, but it just kind of, you know, happened. And I happened to have the capital. So I decided to move forward with it. You know, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but after thinking about it, I was like, okay, I'm going to try something very, very different. And this is very risky, high risk, but if it works out, it could be a very high reward. And that really got me excited. And worst case, it'll be good content, right? Yeah, so I film. You might have seen this episode. I published it, I think a month and a half ago or so. So why did I buy it? Yeah, so I had a few reasons. It was close to me, so, you know, I could come here very often. And I knew the area, so I had confidence that it was going to work out. But I wasn't sure if it was going to work out the way I wanted it to be, because it was a very different way. Okay. And the two main things that I want to discuss is actually good location. So I mentioned that. And the seller was extremely motivated. Okay. So I was able to get 10 million. I thought they were going to say no, and I was going to walk away. And then they came down. They really wanted to sell it. The seller's agent kept calling me back like, hey, can you actually buy this? They couldn't find the buyer. So I was like, okay, I could do it with this. And then they agreed. So I moved forward. This is what it looked like on the inside. So might not look too bad, you know, very typical Akiya. It was abandoned. It had been abandoned or no one was living in there for 7 years. Still stuff left behind. So the owners passed away, the couple, and then their son inherited it. And he didn't want to do anything to do with it. He just wanted to get rid of it. So I was like, okay, it's fine. And yeah, so like squatting toilet, water leak in the bathroom, bunch of tatami rooms. And I decided to completely gut it and do a full renovation. And my goal was to rent it out to a corporate rental. And I knew, okay, I'm gonna share actually, to an international school. Because they have, my spouse actually works for an international school, so I know how things work. And I was targeting very selected families, because I wanted to target a family of four, okay? Because that's how you get the most rent for this specific school. I don't know if this works out for every international school in Japan. But I was targeting a family of four so they could afford the rent. And I budgeted based on that. And I was like, okay, I calculated it. All right, I can make it work. Let's do a gut job and let's add additional bathroom. So this house has one full bathroom downstairs and one shower room. So two toilets, which is quite rare in Japan. So I wanted to target very, very specific family. And this is how it turned out. I did the exterior work. Why did I choose green? I painted the last house in navy, so I wanted something different, something I've never done. I thought it was cool, but yeah, this is how it turned out. But I was very happy with the inside, so it's completely different. Some people say, like, why did you turn that into like a completely Western style? I did leave some Japanese feel to it. This actually, I should have added another picture to showcase, but there is one area that looks quite Japanese, but rest of it, I wanted to attract a foreign family for this. Two showers, who would appreciate like a more spacious living, dining and kitchen area, and two bathroom space. Okay. And before I get into this, I'm going to share why it was very risky. So I was targeting very specific families, right? At the time, I thought it made sense, but the more I thought about it, it got riskier and riskier. Okay, so for those, you know, if you're familiar with international schools in Japan, so they get new teachers, right? New families coming in every year. And they start looking for houses. So there is a very limited time of a window. And I was told by a property manager, I only had 2 days, August 1st and August 2nd. And if you miss that window, you might not get a chance. So you might have to rent to a local tenant. So I was like, oh, okay. I thought I was gonna have like a whole month. and this is like during the renovations, right? So I was like, okay. And how many families are flying in this year? So 15 families, but only five had family of four. So like, okay, if those families don't work out, maybe I can rent it out to a couple, maybe a family of three, but maximum like eight families out of all the potentials, right? The people that are looking for a home. Because if I rent it to someone local or like a market, the rent would be significantly lower. And I didn't want to do that. So because this is how much I spent, this is everything I spent. Okay, so total, you can read everything. So purchase price was 10 million. It's like, okay, that's quite cheap, 69 grand. But look, all the fees that are associated with it, right? I mean, obviously the renovations, 17.9 million yen. Okay, so that's quite a bit. Total 30 million. So that was way more than what I wanted to spend. But I just did it. I wanted to make it as good as possible. So I took the risk and see what happened. I found a tenant. So I actually filmed, you know, these people, they were happy to be filmed. And, this is how much, I got to charge them. But technically it's actually their employer that's paying. So they're not the, you know, literal tenant, but they're the one, the family that are staying. And this is what I got to, charge. So gross yield is 10.3%. I think the cash flow is going to be anywhere between 7 and 9%. I'm pretty happy with it now looking back, but would I do the same, you know, knowing this is what I'm going to get? Or would I just invest that much money into index funds? You know, you can answer that question for yourselves. So that's what I got. So the second case study, I was just told I only got 5 minutes, so I'm going to go quickly. So another high risk, and this one is mid to low reward. Okay. So I bought this house in Saitama, Fukaya, Saitama, very north of Saitama. Good looking house with a car park. This is the view from the second floor. And again, I didn't mean to buy this house. And why did I buy it? We had a member who was actually supposed to buy this. They got a really good deal and moved forward very last minute, found out they weren't able to transfer the money internationally. Their accounts got seized in the country, so they couldn't move forward. But I had an agent, our partner agent, bent over backwards to make this deal happen. And I could have easily said, sorry, like we can't move forward. But they invested so much energy and time and relationship capital with their network, and I felt really bad. And if I said no, I knew I was going to damage the relationship with this partner agent. So what did I do? I bought it. So this is what it looked like. It was a half finished renovation. And this is how it turned out. I spent more money than I wanted to, but it looks very nice. Oops. And this is exactly how much I spent. The purchase price was pretty good, a good deal, $3.5 million, $24,000. But the total is $8.8 million. So quite a bit on the renovations. There were quite a few issues that I didn't even know that I had because I wasn't going to buy. So I realized after the closing. And expected rent is 70,000 yen per month. So gross yield, again, less than 10%. And I usually go after double digit, over 10, 11, 12% cash flow. Is this, again, I could have done better probably. But what did I learn? The first from the one that I just talked about. So we learned a lot from this transaction. So this will not happen within Akihab community anymore. So we have a lot more rigorous process for vetting the people that we work with. So that won't happen again. So that's the number one thing. And also, there are quite a few, two things that I learned. So you need to know why you're doing it. So if you're interested in buying, Akia or real estate in Japan, you got to know why. Obviously, it's interesting. It's exciting. Maybe it's the right opportunity for you. For me, I explained the reasons, right? I wanted to learn the high risk case studies. So for me, I learned so that I could actually learn the process and also build relationships with people that are involved in these deals. So that could, I could use that relational capital to the next deal. Or maybe I got experience working with certain people that I never had before, so that we can try on a different project or recommend people to work with them. So that was a really big thing for me. So I took away quite a bit. Another thing that I learned is you make money in real estate when you buy. So you probably all know this. This is the most, I would say it's one of the most important things in real estate. If you buy right, real estate is very generous, right? You could screw up, spend more money than you planned, like I did, and still come out okay, right? So how do you buy right? So they're on market and off market listings, right? If you want to buy right, you can still make it happen with on market listings, but it's a lot easier, in my opinion, my experience, it's a lot easier to do it with off market listings because there are so many more motivated sellers, or the properties are more distressed, you have access to it before a lot of people do. And we do have access to, those listings as well. So, that's one of the best ways to buy right, in my opinion. But also, working with people who've done it, who are experienced in negotiation, or who have access to the relationships that we might not have. So that's something that I recommend as well. Anyway, so in 2026, I'm going to make a goal to purchase more properties and build my portfolio, but in different markets. I specifically focused on Yokohama in 2024. This year I bought one in Saitama. So that's my first one outside of Yokohama. And in 2026, I'm going to go outside of Greater Tokyo. So stay tuned which markets that's going to be. And I'm very excited to expand my portfolio, but also help our members expand into those areas.
And a multifamily home too, right?
And multifamily, yes. Single family, multifamily. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shu and Brett. They were mentioning this is the last session of the day. This is the last frontal session of the day. We still have one big Q&A panel that I hope they'll stay for as well. But before we let them go and set up for the panel, do we have any questions from the room? Would you like to raise your hands? If no one's asking these guys a question, you guys are totally dead. We have not seen that happen yet. Really? Not a single one? Anything on the stream? No. Okay.
I'm always askable. Hey, Shu, how you doing?
Hi, Dan.
So one issue that I guess I've always had when I look at, because I do U.S. real estate compared to Japan, is the projections going forward. So, if you're getting, So if you're getting, let's say a 10% return cash on cash, But in Japan, you know, you're not seeing much, if any, capital growth, and even rents could go down over time. And then you're going to have to renovate at some point in the future. I'm just wondering if you're projecting that in any way to see, to kind of prepare for that in the future, or maybe I have a misunderstanding of the market.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So, I mean, I own real estate in the U.S. as well. And for those who know, I used to be anti-investing in Japan. It's like, well, you don't get any capital gains. There are places where you can get capital gains, like here, Tokyo. Yes, like it's booming. It's just like other big cities in the world, right? I would say Osaka, parts of Fukuoka, other major cities. So you can get that. And if you go a little bit outside of cities, it's more of a cash flow game. And from my understanding, it is getting harder and harder to get cash flow from real estate in other markets outside of Japan. So I think that alone is attractive. You can still get cash flow. Will you get capital gains? Maybe. So I like to kind of get the blend of a little bit. So like, that's why I really like Yokohama. It's outside enough. Yokohama is a major city, by the way. But it's outside of Tokyo enough so that the housing prices are, in general, a lot cheaper than Tokyo, central Tokyo. You can still get the rent relatively high compared to, you know, those expensive properties in Tokyo as well, so that you can kind of get the sweet spot. But, you know, some people invest in even more outside, like, you know, west of Kanagawa or something like that, right, for cash flow. And if you want to balance your portfolio with capital gains, you know, you can still get places in Tokyo for the future capital gains. So that's, I'm not doing that right now. For my personal portfolio, I'm really focusing on cash flow because that's what I want to build. But I think if you want to balance it out, you can still do that. And then in the future, like buy something in central Tokyo for capital gains. So you get a, you know, a good balance of both. Or something that's, you can get a little bit of both. I think my Yokohama properties, they're not going to like grow in capital gains, like the way in most places outside of Japan are growing, but I think it's going to stay hold or maybe, you know, a little bit, maybe like 2-3% every year. And that's okay with me. I'm focusing on cash flow for those properties right now. Yeah. Hope that answered your question.
I have a question.
Of you.
Yeah.
Just to recap, the 70K a month house, that was unfurnished?
The last one.
Yeah.
Yeah, point of it.
We're renting that the 70K a month.
It's not furnished. I just got ACs. There is a fridge, but that's it.
Look, you're putting out a low term, like 2 year Qingtao.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the market price for that area?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And second question, do you see many Nisekai Jutaku opportunities out there? What's your feeling about those places? Like just two generational like houses. So houses that have any, like, or like an in-law suite, mm-hmm. either with its own door or with a bakubi door. So they're pretty common at countryside, but like, are you seeing many of those and do you like them?
Yeah, so Nisetai Jutaku is a duplex. And from my experience, there are different types of Nisetai Jutaku duplexes in Japan. So I grew up in a duplex actually. So I lived in upstairs, upper unit with my parents and my brother, and lower unit, my grandparents lived, but they're completely separated, like very different units. And there are a lot of houses, larger houses, that are similar setup, but they're internally connected. So in Japan, what do you call those? Like nuclear family or like a larger families, right? Like, you know, you have like three generations. So your grandparents are living downstairs. You know, you live with your parents and then there are two doors, but they're internally connected. So those ones are hard to rent out to two families unless you do something with the layout. But if they're completely disconnected, they're just like a duplex. And I think there's a ton of opportunity to either you stay in one unit and you rent out the other one, or you rent out both for, you know, more rent. There are a few. Yeah, I've seen a few duplexes that are like that, and I like those. And I've, yeah, I'm seeing that they're those ones, especially the setup that works pretty well for rentals in good location. They go pretty quickly. I think investors are pretty sensitive to those deals, and they, from my experience, I don't know other experts if you feel that way, but yeah, they move through pretty quickly.
Okay, one more question here in the room, and while I'm walking here from the stream, somebody's asking, it looks like Akia Hub is set up for non-resident or foreign investors. Do you have anything else for local investors? I didn't get that feeling, but I'm not sure.
I mean, Akia is for everyone. So if you live in Japan, we actually have recently a lot more people that already live in Japan that have been renting for years and years and finally said, oh, I can actually afford a house that is didn't know. And they're looking into properties a little bit outside of the city that they can still commute to. But yeah, there's multiple different buyer personas, and a lot of them, I think, are actually a good, a helpful data point that I didn't provide is, where's everyone from? So we have people from 72 countries. Japan's our number two. Number one is the United States. Japan is actually number two. And number three is Australia. Number four is Canada. Number five, it, by that point, it's like less than 5% of total. So it's like a blend of Southeast Asia. And then 69 other countries. Yeah, so from everywhere. But Japan is actually the number two part of a place where our buyers are already coming from.
And the, sorry. And the services you provide on the platform are the same, regardless of whether
you're regardless of where you're from. We can help you buy everything, do everything in person, but the majority of people do it remotely. Even if they are in Japan, they don't have time to be driving around, doing the viewings, and doing everything that's involved in the process.
So my question has to do with the distinction between the on-market, off-market. Can you clarify, like, the on-market properties would be things that are listed with the real estate agent, like someone is representing the property, and these are listings on, like, At Home, Sumo, your site. But the off market, how do you gain access to off market, and what are the techniques for, you know, reaching out to homeowners who have not, you know, expressed an interest to sell their home?
Yep. So that's part of the biggest opportunity when it comes purely to investing that we look at, is getting and building that off-market network. So yes, everything on our site that you can see by default when you join is on-market. Sumo, it's the equivalent of Zillow, right? So everything there is on-market. But off-market properties, what happens when you have a good network is they'll tell you before they're going to put them on-market, and you maybe have 24 to 48 hours to know that, hey, I have this opportunity. Let's get it. But in order to do that, I mean, Shu spent years developing relationships with different real estate partners that can start opening up the little drawer of papers they have of properties that they know about that are not on the market. And then as you develop those relationships, they bring other and tell other people. So it's completely, you have to know the people. It's who you know.
That sounds like a pocket listing.
They are. That sounds like a pocket listing. Like, that owner fully intends to work with an agent.
They don't,
you're just getting early access.
They don't necessarily. That owner, sometimes the owners don't actually want it to be on the market or anyone know that they're selling. They're just like, if you found the right kind of buyer, I might consider an offer. We do a lot of work to try to vet the off-market deals to make sure the seller really does want to sell the house, because sometimes even if an agent knows of it, they still might not want to actually sell it, or they might not want to sell it to a foreigner.
Okay, last follow-up question. Does the concept of, like, wholesaling real estate exist in Japan? The concept of someone actually working and trying to identify off-market properties and then contracting and then flipping the contract?
So wholesaling in the sense of developing that network, finding the properties, knocking on doors. Yes, absolutely. We have a lot of partners that do that. That's how we build our off-market deal book, so that we can get those properties. We're not personally knocking on all the doors ourselves. But flipping, and I think a couple other people have talked about it, it's not a flipping culture, you know, and we haven't seen a lot of good case studies, and I'd love to see someone do it, of actually flipping. I think Anton talked a bit about, like, can you flip in Japan? Maybe now you can. As he mentioned,
DIY and renovation and that the thought process of Japan has just not been that way for so long. But now people are thinking
not acquiring
short sale, I think
is short sale. Yeah. I mean, I don't have experience with that, so I couldn't answer it. I'm not sure.
A lot of the Japanese agents actually do that. We often come across a deal that's not really registered. Like the ownership transfer process will happen as once we actually apply for it. That's when the agent will take over and then us. So it does happen, but it's more of a practice that some real estate companies do for their books, I'm assuming, or maybe for a bit of added value. I don't know many individuals doing it. Yeah, but folks, we have to cut this short. I'm sorry. So Shu and Brett will still be here for the QA panel. Just give us 5 minutes to set it up, and then you can keep asking them and everybody else who was speaking and is here today questions. I will put the after-party venue QR code on the screen.